Yo, everybody, and welcome to the fourth episode of the Social Echoes podcast. It is Wednesday, January 2nd, 2013, the first episode of the new year. Today's guest is Seth Everett, and let's roll on with the show. Seth, how you doing? Thanks very much for
Good.
joining us.
Thank you for having me, and we finally get to meet. And I do want to say you are much handsomer than your Twitter picture. I really was nervous about this before I actually saw your face. To know you are normal is a very good thing.
for anybody that hasn't seen the Twitter profile picture, I did that because I'm doing a weight loss project that's all on a blog. You can find that on
Oh, okay.
project180.me. But I don't have a I have a smartphone, obviously, but I don't have the front-facing camera, so I kind of did the whole, like, put it to my face and click, and I got lucky because it took a decent photo, and it has worked for the
You look
first,
like Apache Chief from the old Super Friends.
Oh, that sounds pretty good. It's funny because you're the first person that has given me any outside commentary on aside from just like, oh, that's a good, like, yeah, that's a good photo. So I'm glad that you think that I'm normal looking in person. So that's
Well, at
funny.
least it's so far.
So
But the
far,
show
yeah,
is just in its infancy, so you never know how this is going to go.
it could change. My makeup might run down my face.
There you go, right.
So Seth, you're a man who wears many different hats. You've worked for MLB.com. You've worked in baseball for many years, both in the national stage, New York, and even in my own backyard of Philadelphia. How has journalism changed in the last 5 years, just in terms of the social technologies that are being used currently?
Well, the internet is something that has erupted, and I'm not sure how our show in MLB. I mean, to be honest with you, I came to Major League Baseball in 2001, and at the time we were making deals with satellite. Everybody thought satellite was the direction to go in. As a matter of fact, the first show was on Sirius before Sirius launched. And it was my first baseball show. And then when MLB.com hit its economics numbers, they decided to put us exclusively to the internet. And they wanted everything to stem from MLB.com. Any appearance I did on a show, I had to reference them. Everything was streamlined through them. I don't think you can do that with Twitter and Facebook and everything that exists now. And what I was wondering always is I'm curious to see how my old employers embrace social media, because I think they are at the forefront of the technology. I mean, the MLB app, at Bat app, is the preeminent sports technology. I mean, to be able to watch a baseball game on that is fantastic.
It is a lot of fun.
But if Twitter existed when I was doing shows that were exclusive to MLB, what would we be tweeting? What would we have been sending out? So I think it's definitely changed the way things have gone, and I do believe that there's a great internet presence that you can have that complements what you do on television or radio. If I go on television and they put my Twitter handle on the screen, I've done that at NBC Sports Network, I've done that at Bloomberg Television, I get followers from no for out of nowhere. People see your Twitter handle. That's all it takes. There's got to be something to that, and there's got to be a lesson to be learned there.
Sure. So would you say that you actually have more to go off? Well, certainly you have more to go off of now in terms of just the amount of information that's being given to you by your followers and different things on networks. Is that a good or bad thing for a journalist?
Well, it's changed the way I've covered things. I mean, a great example, last November, not this past one, but my last November, when my daughter was born, I didn't see the urgency to go to the winter meetings because I tweet with every person that I needed to talk to when I was there, and here I was given a bottle at night and I was getting all the information. There wasn't anything that I didn't need that I needed to know. This year, I didn't go to the winter meetings simply because I didn't need to. So logistically, it's changed, and general managers have told me the social networking and the ability to Skype and the Google this and the Spreecast that and the this, that, and the other thing, to be able to communicate like this, trades are being able to done, and you can read people's body language. Shows that I've done that are on the internet, people laugh because I have two screens, and I put TweetDeck on one of my screens, so people think I'm not paying attention. So, like, you can say something, and I can look this way. It's literally because you're absorbing information all the time. And notice all the people that yell at me are all women. But the reality of it is that people understand that there's something to it. I do definitely believe that in this day and age, one of the neat things that I can offer, and I think one of the things that's a hook on why stations will have me on, is that they know I'll tweet stuff and that I will promote it. And that gives them promotion that they didn't have. So I think it's all cyclical, and I think that that's been a really great thing. I also get to fight with Philadelphia people, which is a blast.
And we, in turn, get to fight with New York, which is always
so much
fun.
No, and I'm not New York. I'm not New York. This is I'll tell you my the greatest tweet, the greatest ability of Twitter that I ever had was I adore the Philadelphia Phillies. The Phillies have been nothing but good to me. Charlie Manuel is a friend of mine. Jimmy Rollins is a friend of mine. For me to work and do their pre and post game for a year was a great experience. That doesn't mean I have to adopt all Philadelphia sports teams.
Right.
And
yeah, sure.
I'm pretty objective when it comes to sports, except for my disdain for the Philadelphia Flyers. I can't stand the Philadelphia Flyers. I despise them. And working for the Phillies was not going to change that. And so what happened was, I remember as clear as day, well, probably because there isn't any hockey now, but it was a Saturday afternoon. The Devils were playing the Flyers. And I tell this story on the air all the time. My family, when I was 8 years old, moved to New Jersey the same day the Devils moved from Colorado. So
okay.
There's a kinship between me and the Devils, and
there's a synchronicity between you and the
New Jersey Devils. So I'm a New Jersey Devils fan. The Devils were winning, and I was at the mall with my little one and my wife, and I'm getting the updates on the goals, and it's 6-0 New Jersey after two, and all I wrote on Twitter was, "Every one of these goals feels great," and if I had a nickel for every hate, like the bitter hatred from Philadelphia's, how could you do this, you traitor? You're a guffaw. And my favorite part of that was nobody unfollowed me. You know what I mean? Like nobody said, I don't want to have anything to do with this guy. I want to follow him because I want to continue to fight with him about hockey. And I said, you know what?
Yeah.
That's a great thing. And I actually give Philadelphia, the city, a lot of credit for that, because you can be as obnoxious as you want. You're not going to walk away. And I love that.
And I think that's the best part, too. I was actually asked during the Stanley Cup playoffs when the Flyers were playing the Devils, and I unabashedly am a huge Flyers fan. In terms of 1-4 in the sports sound, it goes Flyers, Phillies, and then a giant gap between the Eagles and the Sixers.
Okay.
And I remember during the playoffs, I tweeted something after, I think, the Flyers only won the one game in that series.
Right.
So I think it was probably game 2 or 3. I tweeted something, and somebody else got on it, and they were saying, like, I hate the – like kind of like in the same way that you're like, you just don't like the Flyers. And I'm using less harsh language than you did.
Sure.
I didn't use anything that harsh, but – I actually had somebody say, unfollow me. I didn't, because I just thought it was so funny that, like, he took it so personally. And, like, I grew up playing hockey. I was at the game when Scott Stevens literally destroyed Eric Lindros as a Philadelphia Flyer.
I will never forget that.
I was 13 years old. I was crushed. I was, like, you know,
he
my favorite number.
He destroyed him. Oh, my goodness.
I was there with my dad, and it was like, oh, but could you imagine, let's just think about it today. If that event happened and you have all the technologies that you do today, could you imagine the firestorm that would have been the trending topic of Eric Lindros and concussions and Scott Stevens that you would have seen on Twitter and even the Instagram photos that you would have seen of that event?
Oh, yeah.
You would not have been able to miss that. Yeah. And I think that's some of the most interesting thing, and that's exactly why – you have teams like the Dodgers and the Phillies that it will be coming up, you know, soon enough, getting these massive
television rights,
TV contracts, yeah. Because the DVRs and everything else in the world, live sports, until it's a final score, live sports are some of the most rich content that you can provide to anybody.
There's actually something to that, and there's a research study that I've done that backs that up. But before that, I want to tell you my other favorite Twitter story in Philadelphia was the Winter Classic. I had to go to the Winter Classic. I had to. I mean, if you think about it, it was in Citizens Bank Park, which is one of my favorite ballparks, and I had to go. And I was in awe of everything, and I was taking pictures, and I was posting them, and I was excited about it, and I was doing all these things. And somebody tweeted at me and said, "Who do you want to win this thing?" I said, "Honestly, I hope it's 0-0, and I hope both teams break their ankles." my two hating teams, and I said, "You couldn't pay me if they were playing inside. You couldn't pay me to go to the game, but because it was outside, everybody had to say it." But to your point about sports rights and how it's changing, Netflix and Hulu and whatnot are changing everything. I think what's happened as a result is, with the advent of the iPad and the Apple TV and things like that, sports rights are the only things that are keeping these rates high for these cable companies. So they are paying through the roof to have these sports rights fees, which is why it's a great time to have a new collective bargaining agreement where there's a new luxury tax threshold in baseball of 189. Teams still do not want to pay over that. And you're starting to see a movement where I think the Dodgers right now are the other team, but they have a full season, so I'm not sure they're going to go into 2014 having a threshold over 189. Right now they're something like 225 or whatnot. But if you notice, the Yankees are trying to get under it, and to me, if the Yankees are trying to get under that threshold, everybody else in baseball will. And the one thing I don't agree with for Phillies fans is, don't blame them for not wanting to pay a luxury tax. Nobody else in baseball does, and that doesn't mean you're a small market franchise. Teams do not want to pay over that threshold, nor should they, which was why when they were in the process of the Cole Hamels stuff, a better example was 2011 when they acquired Hunter Pence. People got on me because they thought I wanted Beltran. I wanted Beltran because it was no money. I didn't know the Astros were going to pay Hunter Pence's salary. If you told me Hunter Pence was going to get – sure, of course I wanted Hunter Pence. Well, why would I think – and I said, and I stand by, Hunter Pence was not worth paying luxury tax. And Ruben Amaro agreed.
Completely agree with that.
Right. And that's all it was. Yeah, that was my fun controversies.
Yeah. This is fun because we could probably do two separate shows based on just sports in general. And
there you go.
I'll have to join you for one of your Spreecast shows, for baseball and everything. But let's talk a little bit about Spreecast. I remember when Spreecast first launched, pretty recently in Relativity, you were one of the first ones to kind of adopt it and kind of make that your own thing. You kind of latched onto it and said, "This is really cool." Mm-hmm. How has Spreecast kind of enabled you to do more with your readers, your listeners, anybody else that follows you?
Well, Spreecast was something that came to me when they launched in November of 2011. I got on board in February of 2012, January, February of 2012. And basically they just were like, "Try this thing out. It's actually pretty cool." And I liked it because of the community of the whole thing. I'm not trying to rip anything. I find it a lot more user-friendly than Google Plus or Skype or any of those other things. I happen to found it really easy. And then I got to be creative with ideas. What I found was when I go on the radio or when I have to go on television, it's to talk baseball or to talk sports. If I want to talk Phillies, Spreecast is a great angle because you don't have to do the other things. My favorite Spreecast was I did one about the Seattle Supersonics, and I had these two filmmakers who are friends of mine, these two filmmakers that won an award for a documentary they made about the NBA and how David Stern scammed them out of a team, and it's called Sonicsgate.
I think I saw that. It's excellent, brilliant.
It's brilliant, and you'll never drink Starbucks again if you watch this movie, and you'll never look at the NBA the same way ever again. And what happened was that was a favorite one. Another one that I did, I'm actually going to be doing a follow up to it pretty soon, was about Prince, the musician. I'm a big Prince fan. I have been for 20 years, and I decided I was just going to do a spreecast. I didn't have a guest booked. I just was going to do it, and anybody who was a Prince fan would come on, and it was really funny. it was very funny because when what had happened at the time, one of the creators of Spreecast, one of the engineering creators of Spreecast, comes on, and somebody texts me and says, "Hey, put this guy Ron on." And I said, okay, I put Ron on. And I said, hey, Ron, how's it going? And Ron tells me that he was a guy who designed Prince's website in the late 90s. I was like, holy crap. and then the second Prince spreecast we did, I got this blogger, this guy, Dr. Funkenberry, who does these, he runs a music site. And it turns out Prince reached out to him and watched our spreecast. So it was like, where are you going to have the interaction of some stupid idea that I thought of in my office that all of a sudden now has legs. We did a spreecast on the movie Superman Returns. And we just said, Superman Returns, did it suck? And we just had this debate on whether or not it sucked. So it's like, it's a platform where you can do specific topics. Whereas in the mass media, you're doing everything, you know, you're doing all encompassing topics.
Yeah, and I knowing you, and just not in the sense, this is the first time we've ever spoken face to face in this sense. I have reached you through Facebook Messenger many a time, and mm-hmm. even when you're on air, I think it was during one of the times when the Phillies were still viable in the playoffs, and I asked you a question, and you actually mentioned my name on air, and I got really excited. And I said, oh, that's fantastic.
I get in trouble for multitasking a little too much when I'm on the air, but I do it all the time.
But I think that's great, though, and I think that's certainly that's something like Spreecast really enables the community to kind of come in and chip in their ideas, more so than you might certainly more than you'd see on a traditional television show, and even more, it's more like a radio show, it just with video. Mm-hmm. Because you can end up having callers and kind of invite them in, and you then allow them to kind of give their opinion, or allows them to, you know, speak whatever they had on their minds.
Right.
I just think that's fantastic.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And that's what I mean. I always try to just make it seem like if you're listening to me on the radio or watching me on TV or even talking to me on the internet, I want you to believe I'm your friend. I did something. I set up, when I joined Facebook, I purposely set it up so that I eliminated any potential privacy issues so that I could literally friend anyone. And I invited people to friend me. It's funny, I created a public page and I can't get anybody to go to my public page because I put everything on my personal page. So it's the stupidest thing in the world. They said the only way I can do it is if I eliminate my personal page. But I have ex-girlfriends.
You've now gifted everybody personal access to Seth Everett, and they are, right. Why would they go anywhere else except for right to the source?
Yeah, exactly.
You do a lot of, you are a social guy, but you are a Syracuse alum. You do a lot of spreecasts on SU basketball and SU sports.
Sure.
I did one for hoops and also the Pinstripe Bowl that just happened.
Yep.
Not too long ago.
Yeah, we have one today for Jim Boeheim's going. I didn't mean to cut you off there. Sorry.
That's fine. Go ahead.
No. Syracuse one was I'm a Syracuse alum, and what I did was I had to speak to a class, and I got invited to go up there, and I went up there. I spoke to students, and I do that, I would say, every 2 or 3 years. I go up there, and it was fun because a bunch of students came up with the idea and said, why don't we do a pregame show? We'll just do a pregame show. And I said, great. I said, you guys are going to do the heavy lifting. I said, I'll host it from time to time. I said, but you guys will do the heavy lifting, and it'll be a chance for you guys to get your names out there. And here are these students, they're sophomores and juniors, the ones who they're not yet calling games, but they know the team better than anybody. And they really are the ultimate, like, insiders, you know. they did a really good job. And the Syracuse show, I'm just proud of them. You know, I'm proud of the way they've brought a certain professionalism to what they're doing. And some guys have branched off and done NFL shows for themselves. And, I mean, what great experience. God, when I was in college, that would have been awesome. I'd have had a blast with that.
Yeah, I did get to actually listen and watch one this morning. And I think you had two young guys named Mark and Zach.
Yes. Yeah. They're good kids. They were good. They hold their own. They look young, but they're holding their own. They're doing a good job.
Yeah, they did a great job, and that was something that I think is that's very valuable to anybody that certainly wants to get into the same kind of industry that the broadcasting journalism industry that you're in, and to kind of have those background credits to your name is excellent. I don't know if you have any experience with the Syracuse iSchool. Mm-hmm. Do you?
Sure. Yeah, I met with them when I went up there. Kelly does a great job, and Kelly Lux, and she kind of runs it, or she runs the social part of it, and they do some interesting things. It's very technological driven up there, and they have a great presence, and they do a remarkable job. And what I've told them is something that I think they're going to start incorporating Spreecast into some of their classes.
Great.
I once did I was an adjunct professor at St. John's University about 18 months ago, and I taught a class entirely on Spreecast.
Wow.
And for a commuter school, they were excited because they didn't have to go to school. but they had to have 100% attendance. Like, you could not be there. Like, you had to be there. And that was the trade-off that we did, and it worked. It was very, very cool. And it's neat to see the way technology is going. And my wife keeps telling me that I should, because I'm always interested in taking classes and expanding, you know, things that I know. And the reality of it is you can all do that at home now. I don't think I need to, you know, buy a book bag and bring a lunchbox and start, you know, schlepping my way to campuses.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. There's a lot of different, you know, for credit and not for credit classes and universities like that. You know, there's many on the side of non-credited, like Khan Academy and Udemy and Udacity, but also there's a bunch of Syracuse graduates, alums, that work for a company that I'm pretty friendly with, 2U in New York City, and they're in Landover. They're all over the world, really. But those
what's
are the two offices
what's it
that I know. 2U. It's two just the numeral U. 2 and then the letter 2. It used to be called Tutor, number 2, TOR.
Mm-hmm.
And a young lady by the name of Jen Peedy, P-E-D-D-E, will be an adjunct professor at SU sometime in 2013.
Oh, cool.
She runs a lot of she's a lot of fun. You can find her online at JPD, and I can send that over to you and anybody else
please.
That is interested in finding out more about Jen. She runs a great community manager chat that actually just happened not too long ago. Happens every Wednesday midday. But there are some I know a couple students that are up at Syracuse, and some of the stuff that comes out of there is always fantastic, and all the journalists that come out of there, like yourself and Michael Barkan, are always so good. You guys are so engaging, and I think that's something that is that's so invaluable.
Yeah, Barkan's good. He's good people. Barkan's a good dude. I'm just saying, Barkan wound up sitting behind me at a California Pizza Kitchen and scared the crap out of me. If he's watching this, he scared the crap out of me. I was sitting with him. We were sitting there maybe 15 minutes, and I guess I hadn't noticed him when I was walking, and we were sitting with our backs turned, and I turned around because my daughter was pointing to something, and I went, holy crap, and he was just, like, standing there. It was like a, one of, like, like a Stephen King novel. It was
That's funny. All right, Seth. Well, I want to ask you a couple different questions that I have kind of, not okay. so much that they're canned, but they will be part of the show as we move forward, but you're going to be the first one that I kind of use these on.
Okay.
They do not have to be anything in the social realm. They could be anything that you want them to be, but if they are of the social industry, fantastic.
Okay.
Recommended reading, a book that you're either reading or have read that you would suggest listeners to go ahead and read.
For entertainment or knowledge?
Either or. Let's say just for constructive purposes, knowledge.
Oh.
I see you have plenty of books behind you. Those of you that are listening to the audio version.
Seth has two of a huge good
stacks
example.
Of books behind him.
It's a good book. This is a pretty. This is one of the more recent books I know you're a Philadelphia guy, but this. And I'm not a Yankee fan per se, but this is a fantastic book.
Steinbrenner.
The Steinbrenner book by Bill Madden. This is a great read. Macnow's book on sports movies is pretty good. Have you seen that, Glenn Macnow's book?
But no, I haven't. I've read a lot of Glenn's stuff previously.
And then if you're just going for entertainment, this is called Kingdom Come. This is a fantastic novel. It's done by a painter. It's done by an author named Mark Wade and a painter named Alex Ross. This is just some of the artwork, and so it's pretty intense.
Very cool.
But Kingdom Come would be something I'm reading. I've read years ago.
Yeah,
there was an audio version. I want iTunes to get it. Please, iTunes, get Kingdom Come, please.
We will have iTunes work on that immediately.
Get iTunes on that.
All right. What's worth watching? What are some of your favorite TV shows, movies, documentaries that you would suggest people to go out and watch?
I've been very into Louie recently.
Great show. Great show.
That is a fantastic show, Louie. Also, The League.
Yep.
Is very, very funny. The Big Bang Theory. I'm a big I'm a big fan. I'm kind of a nerd like that. The Newsroom. I would say The Newsroom on HBO is a fantastic show.
Have you seen the BBC's version of that called The Hour?
No.
It's a bit. Imagine if you were to take The Newsroom and Mad Men and mix them together, and you have a newsroom in the 1960s in Great Britain. It's a lot of fun, and I would say I'm half Anglophile. I'm a big BBC television watcher.
If you talk about British shows that I think are brilliant, Coupling. Have you ever seen Coupling?
I have not.
That's really funny. It's like the British version of Friends.
Okay.
That's pretty good. The original Office. It was really funny. Yep. I watched the original Office before I ever saw the American version of The Office. The British version, I had read an article. Actually, I had seen an HBO special on stand-up with Ricky Gervais, Chris Rock, Louis C.K., and Jerry Seinfeld. And Ricky Gervais...
Talking funny.
Something like that, yeah. And Ricky Gervais says, you know, you guys are fascinating. You guys all worked in nightclubs and honed your craft. He says, I had an internship in an office, and that's how I made my money because I wrote a spoof of the, that show. And then I read that the British Office was only like 12 episodes or 14 episodes. I said, get out of here. I said, this thing has this legacy. It's only 14 episodes. So through the magic of Netflix, I watched the British Office before I ever saw the original Office. And as much as I like the original Office, I still think the British one is just as good.
Oh, you mean you like the original version of in the UK better than the
American version? Right, the UK version. And the funny thing was when Steve Carell was leaving, remember they did all the auditions for the interviews for who was going to run the place? And Ricky Gervais was David Brent, which was his British character. And, you know, the comic book fan in me was like, that's universes collide. Like, you love to know, like, my favorite thing was always Frasier leaving Cheers. But he was still Frasier. He was still that guy. He's still, you know, continuity is one of those fascinating things. That's a big comic book thing. Like, like the way the X-Men movies do it. And when in X-Men First Class, the girl who is playing the young Mystique, she tries to make herself look older, so she looks like Rebecca Romijn. Brilliant. Just brilliant. That was... Like, that's the kind of you know, all that, you know, like, if something happens on one show and it carries over to the next show. I don't know if you remember, but in the early 90s, they did a show about a blackout. And it was on Friends, they had a blackout. And the power went out on Mad About You, and the power went out on Seinfeld, and it was like the whole day the power went out because of whatever happened in the first show. It was brilliant.
That's great. That's funny, and that ripple effect is very interesting. You know, one of my jobs at True Voice Media, I'm infatuated with story, and I think that a lot of brands can do so much with their story, and they're sitting on a ton of content. But you know, you're talking about Michael Scott meeting David Brent.
Right.
I'm sure you've seen the blooper reel of that season, watching Ricky and Steve Carell just laughing at the other one. They like, basically, it wasn't their mission to get the line right. It was their job to basically make the other one laugh as hard as they could.
Right.
And it was so funny.
And the thing that they're going to do when they end that I think is brilliant is you're going to meet the people who filmed it.
Yeah.
Because remember, it's supposed to be a mocking documentary. Like, who are these documentary filmmakers that have been there for 10 years and tried to do these things? So.
And I think that the American version of The Office lost something. And after season 3 or 4 or 5, there was an element of actual mockumentary, like, you know, them bumping into things and camera angles not being proper. And when they became more successful, they started getting more viewers and everything. The camera angles became more professional. The shots became a lot clearer. And there was something about the show, and I'm still a huge lover of the American Office and a big fan of the UK version. Mm-hmm. But there was something about the actual way that the show was presented that was lost on me after that. I just kind of felt like it wasn't the same.
That's fair.
Yeah. But, okay, one more question.
Sure.
It drives you crazy when you see people do what in social media?
It drives me crazy when I have people... Oh, it used to not be my pet peeve, but it's become my pet peeve. When your profile pic is not you.
Okay, so I just get through that little pet peeve of yours by not being the best most
unless you have a logo, or like, for example, I just saw True Voice Media's Twitter handle, that's their logo. You know, if you have a website and you're a brand, then put your brand logo there. But if it's not you, and all the people who put their kids on the Facebook pictures, that's fine, but put you with the kids. I'm not friends with your kids. I'm friends with you, especially if you're hot.
That was a good one. Well, Seth Everett, thank you so very much for being a guest on the Social Echoes podcast.
Thanks for having me.
It has been an absolute blast. For those of you that are looking to get more involved with Seth, where can we find you online?
The best way to do it would be my Twitter handle there. You know, if we were on Spreecast, I could put that right on the screen. at Seth_Everett is the best way to find me, Everett. Don't do just at Seth Everett, because that's some dude in Missouri. He has 35 followers, and I know 12 of them, who think they're following me. Seth_Everett, and you can just, whenever I promote anything, television, radio, or whatnot, I make sure that I tweet it out. I put stuff on Twitter all the time.
The underscore will get you to the right man.
That's right.
In terms of the Social Echoes podcast, you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe if you have not done yet. So yet, please tell your mother, please tell anybody else with a computer connection or a smartphone to go ahead and take a listen to the podcast. We appreciate it very much. Next week, we will have Mr. ...2013. We again thank our guest, Seth Everett, and we'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
Cool, dude.